The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday. In the Israel Update with Anthony Rice, only on Chai FM.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. Good. Thank you, Howard. How are you guys doing?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Before we start, can we get an update on the incident of the shooting near Ofra? And to get an idea as well, obviously, as to how the victims are doing.
So as you mentioned yesterday, actually, during the time of our broadcast, there was an update on the state of the baby that was delivered in an emergency cesarean section after the mother was injured. Unfortunately, the condition of that baby did worsen yesterday, as you mentioned. And that's really the last that we know. The parents of Shira Ishran, the young pregnant lady who was shot in the lower abdomen while 30 weeks pregnant, her situation remains stable but still critical. She's still in intensive care. She apparently has been responding to her parents who visited her in the intensive care. Her baby was born by emergency cesarean section, as I mentioned, at only 30 weeks old, so very premature. Initially, the condition of the baby was thought to be good. Afterwards, unfortunately, the condition worsened, and that's what we know at the moment. So we're still praying very hard for the safety of Shira and her newly born son, who hopefully will see this very serious time through and that they will be healthy. Unfortunately, Shira lost a lot of blood during that shooting incident, as I said before, she was shot in the lower abdomen. Her husband, Amichai, was shot three times in the leg. He seems to be okay, in reasonably good condition. But unfortunately, at the moment, Shira and her young son are still in need of prayers and in need of very, very intensive medical support in order to get them through this tough time. Shira's parents both were involved in giving an update about her condition and about the fact that they'd visited her and very much appreciative of the support that they've been receiving from all around the world, people praying for the safety of the two injured people. That's what we know at the moment in terms of the victims themselves. In terms of finding the perpetrators of that attack, there is still work going on. We understand by the idea from the security services to try to apprehend the people who have perpetrated those attacks, that attack near Ofra. Apparently, there are still no arrests. It doesn't necessarily mean that our security services haven't got their eye on the individuals or don't know who they are. I think we'll have to just watch the story as it progresses just to see what the security services do about that. I think we can be fairly sure that they will be determined in getting to the bottom of who was responsible, whether it was just individuals acting of their own accord or whether this was something that was a broader support by some of the groups, some of the terror groups that operate around the West Bank. I've just seen an update right now saying that, in fact, the condition of Shira has slightly improved and continues to improve. So at least there is some good news that's coming out this morning. Predictably, the Palestinian Authority has said that they can't be held responsible for the attack or have anything to do with the attack because it was outside of the area of their control. And so, therefore, as far as they're concerned, this has nothing to do with them. In fact, it's interesting that the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas did say that he had called Prime Minister Netanyahu to offer his condolences over a terror attack. It's not clear whether it was this one or whether he was just referring to other particular attacks. There's obviously some sensitivity around this attack from the Palestinian Authority, and they did try and go out of their way to push away any responsibility or involvement as far as they possibly can. I think it would be fair to say on the positive side that there has been quite a lot of security cooperation going on between Israel and the Palestinian Authority in recent times. So I would expect that there may well be some cooperation at a security level going on in order to try to apprehend these individuals, even though in the public eye, in the public eye, and especially for the Arab press and for the Arab public, the Palestinian Authority wished to be kind of distancing themselves from this in terms of taking any responsibility. So we will keep watching, first of all, on the condition of the injured, in the hope that they will recover very soon. And of course, in terms of apprehending the people who were responsible for perpetrating this quite hideous attack, quite random, just shooting at people standing at the bus stop. It seems to be the most terrible way to go about a terror attack, and especially when a young pregnant woman has been so seriously injured in this way.
You know, obviously, I do want to move on to another story, but the obvious irony in all of that is that whilst the Palestinian Authority continue to pay the families of the perpetrators of terror, no matter what they say about condolences, it's all pretty empty. Moving along, Qatar has been pushing hard to get Israel to agree to building an airport in Gaza. What's Israel's response to this been so far?
So this is all quite an interesting story, because obviously there are attempts by the Qataris to become much more involved with things that are happening in Gaza. We've seen them donating a lot of money in order to try to support the Hamas authorities and the Hamas regime in Gaza. And they are really very, very openly now going about the business of supporting Hamas and trying to, act as humanitarians in a way to the situation in Gaza. The problem, of course, is that, you know, if it was only humanitarian aid that they were offering, or if their offers of humanitarian aid were only being used for humanitarian purposes, this would all be very positively received. The truth of the matter is, and as we know, is that unfortunately a lot of the financing goes towards terror activities. And of course, this is where the Israeli government is extremely sensitive. And the same applies to the possibility of an airport being built in Gaza, because the concern is that any way of getting goods and services into Gaza in an easier manner will effectively be hijacked, excuse the pun, and will be used for purposes that are related to terror. And, of course, this is where the sensitivity lies. So the idea of an airport being built in Gaza, even if the only route would be actually to Qatar, and that's the way that the Qataris have offered it. They've said if they have a route that goes flies to and from Qatar, and that the Qataris will be responsible for taking care of security arrangements when the planes land in or take off from Doha, that this should be acceptable to the Israelis because all the security arrangements will be taken care of then. No, I don't think that the Israelis would really accept that. And in fact, what was an interesting counter proposal from the Israeli side is that an airport be built outside of Gaza, which would be accessible to those people who do want to use it for genuine purposes. They would be able to use the airport, but it would not be within the Gaza Strip itself. It would be effectively on the Israeli side of the border. This has not been very positively received by the Qataris. So it seems, for the moment at least, that there will be no airport for Gaza or near Gaza or accessible to Gazans who wish to travel abroad. And for the moment at least, the status quo remains. But it's interesting to me to see the Qataris being so actively involved now in negotiations on behalf of Hamas, on behalf of Gaza, directly with the Israeli government in order to try to somehow change the status quo of things in Gaza. And as I've said before, it doesn't really need the Qataris to be involved in this. The Israeli government would quite happily volunteer to change the status quo of the situation in Gaza, providing that, you know, the obvious security concerns can be allayed and that there can be some guarantee that whatever the Israeli government gives in terms of concessions will not be hijacked, will not be taken advantage of in order to bring further terror to Israelis living not only around the Gaza area, but indeed further afield as well. So this is going to be an ongoing argument, not a discussion, I think it's a disagreement almost, about trying to free the situation up in Gaza, trying to loosen things up a little bit, as opposed to keeping security control around what's happening there. This is a real issue because, on the one hand, we've got millions of Gazans who really do deserve greater humanitarian assistance, who really do deserve to have an easier life and to have more access to the things that we would expect them to have access to as free citizens. But on the other hand, unfortunately, the regime is taking advantage of that and using whatever concessions are being delivered for their own purposes in terms of bringing terror to Israel. So this is the dilemma that Israel has.
But Anthony, what do you think? You know, obviously, you know, I'm fairly skeptical about Qatari's sudden interest and sudden involvement here with the with regard to the citizens of Gaza. What is really what does Qatar have to gain? Where is this? Where do they sit in this whole Middle Eastern divide between Iran and Saudi Arabia, etc.? Is there something that they gain through this play?
It's an interesting question, and one that I don't have a direct answer to, because I'm not exactly sure what a political interest, at least within the Arab world, the Qataris might have. What we do know about Qatar is that they have been trying very hard in recent years to promote their overall global exposure in terms of, you know, World Cup football activities, and in terms of, you know, building airports that will have loads of passengers coming through, and, you know, in terms of just creating for themselves a much greater presence on the world map, and bringing Qatar more to the forefront of people's conscience and people's activities, so that people become more aware of Qatar as a country. But in fact, what's interesting is that most Qataris are actually Sunni Muslim, and only about 10% of them are Shia. So, you know, that also represents, you know, shows which side of the religious divide they fall, because obviously they very much fall onto the Sunni side of the family. And this is not what Iran is. Iran is 90 to 95% Shia. So from a purely religious point of view, you would not expect Qatar to align itself with Iran. But yet Qatar wants to be more on the world map, wants to be more recognized and have people more aware of who Qatar is as a country, even though they're such a tiny country. But of course, they have massive wealth and they can throw money at things. And that's what they've been doing at the moment. They've really just been throwing money into Gaza. They've been throwing money, you know, at World Cup football events in order to build stadiums and to impress people and to build things up. And we're really seeing the effects of the oil money coming through here. So I don't know that this is necessarily a Middle East play from Qatar, but I think it's more of a play on the world stage.
Interesting, and certainly it's a story that we'll keep an eye on, because it's a fairly new development within the region, and that always is fascinating to watch. Finally, B'Tselem has received a human rights award in France. What is this award for? And maybe you want to give us a sense, our listeners, a sense of who B'Tselem actually is.
B'Tselem is an Israeli organization, actually, that presents itself as a human rights organization and has been very, very vocal and very active in speaking out against the Israeli government, against the Israeli government's policies, against what they call the occupation. So this is an Israeli organization that really feeds and fuels all of those anti-Israel organizations around the world, the likes of BDS and organizations like that, are really fueled by B'Tselem, because B'Tselem is the Jewish friend that these anti-Israel organizations have. You know, we always say, well, we're not anti-Jewish because we have a lot of Jewish friends. In the case of these anti-Israel organizations, their Jewish friends happen to be in B'Tselem, and that gives them some sort of credibility. And unfortunately, B'Tselem as an organization really lends a lot of credibility to the anti-Israeli activities that go on around the world. And this is really, really unfortunate, particularly because, of course, they are native Israeli themselves. And the B'Tselem CEO, Chagai El-Ad, is well known for, you know, speaking out very vocally against activities by the Israeli government, against activities by the IDF. And here we go. This is now France saying, look, we're going to give a human rights award to an Israeli organization. Doesn't that sound great? Well, it happens to be B'Tselem. And in the acceptance speech of this award that was presented in France, Chagai El-Ad said, Israel is in a state of lies, propaganda, and threats. And then went on to talk about the occupation and continuing state violence leading to dispossession, killing, and oppression. So this is all highly unfortunate because it really doesn't present the truth of the situation. And when you look at the activities that are carried out by the IDF soldiers and the threat under which Israel continues to live, then this really does not present the situation as it is. The good news, and I know we're running a little bit late, but the good news is that the French government itself refused to be involved, even though French government officials were called upon to actually present the award to B'Tselem. They refused to do so as a sensitivity towards the Israeli government, who obviously oppose this award and oppose B'Tselem as an organization. So at least the French government understood that and managed to get away from being involved by refusing to present the prize.
Absolutely fascinating. A world gone completely mad.